It sounds like there's a laser like incoming, so we got to cut out all the unnecessary words.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. All lore boys nominal. My name is Peter O'Donoghue, and I am joined by Ilkhan.
I got my nominal stuck in my pee hole.
Ilkhan Ethan Palmer, I guess, and Precenter Marshall.
James Miller.
There you go. Yeah, we've got the rebel and we've got the media guy.
Jamie, can I have your nominal? I want to get it to get mine out.
Mine's I'm not nominal. I think I'm numeral. I don't know how this stuff works.
Yeah, all Romans numeraled is reference. So the internet's number one fake history podcast, according to us, returns to finish what the BattleTech bitch clans never could, and that is the Battle of Tukey-Eid.
The Battle of Tuke, like the Canadian hat.
Yep.
My friend Ayid.
Yeah, so it's like a knit cap for a guy we know.
Yeah.
is for our American listeners, is what this BattleTech episode is focused around.
Yeah. Now, Peter, we've talked about BattleTech in the past, right?
I don't think we have.
Am I an idiot thinking that we've talked about this before?
Dude, for sure we've talked about it before, because instead of an intro, Pete said blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
That's what you call burying the lead. This.
Yeah. Downloaded this for a reason, you fucking nerds. Just listen. I'd like to do a quick little recap here. So we're going to go send it over to Duncan Fisher and whatever names that you two improvise over on TSN, which is the Solaris Network. It's sponsored by Tim Hortons, Canada's favorite coffee. You can't spell favorite without you.
Sure. Isaac Holmes with Galactic Sports here. We got the clans coming in from the deep periphery, coming to spoil our fun for the home team here on the on Tukey-Eid.
Duncan Fisher and Ian Holmes also joined with
James O'Frick.
James O'Frick. He's our James Arab O'Frick correspondent. It's AFRIQ. The first clan in the conference to head to the finals on Tukey-Eid, the Smoke Jaguars, were fresh off their defeat on Luthien and had something to prove. Team captain Lincoln Osis was clearly not ready for the Calm Guard offensive line and were knocked out of the playoffs. Bad day to be a Jags fan, wouldn't you say, Ian?
Oh, it certainly is. It certainly is. There's been quite a massacre down here on 2KE. The home team's just really giving them a run for their money, these outfielders, huh?
So, guys, as someone who doesn't know a lot about sports or BattleTech, maybe we should do a quick recap so I can follow better this time.
Well, thank God you've tuned into TSN, the Solaris Network here, because the second blow of the early games of the Tukey-Eid Conference was dealt to the rest of the Cat people when the Nova Cats tried to, if we recall, slow drop their forces from the sky.
Right, they're just dropping in at a snail's pace here, and boy, are they just getting picked off like sitting ducks up there, huh?
They absolutely is some would say that a sitting duck is actually a harder target because it's not gigantic and just sitting in the sky. The ComGuard's Eric Force, of course, shredded the Nova Cats to pieces here. Are you a gambling man, Ian?
I've been known to bankrupt my family and join the crap store from time to time.
The Steel Vipers landed next in the Battle of Tukey-Eid.
Give me 1,000 credits on the Steel Vipers.
we're recapping the losses that have already happened.
Put it all on Steel Vipers, baby. I'm there for
them. I'm gonna tell you not to do that.
They're gonna pull through. Listen to me. What the fuck do you have, Chet? Listen to me, okay? They're gonna fucking pull through. I need this, okay? They're underdogs. The odds are giving them 10-1. I need this, okay? I'm walking out of here with 10,000 credits. Put it all. All on Steel Vipers.
Seabills, baby.
Yeah, Seabills.
The Steel Vipers landed next, but for some reason agreed to play hockey in the Devil's Pass, a volcanic swamp where their skates were useless and
well,
even a hindrance.
Good for hockey. Chet.
That's no good. It's like, you know, the molten ground is no good for skates. I'm going to say that. San Jose's Diamond Sharks landed next, but they never watched the enemy team play or even bothered to read about the rules of the game. They had neglected to account for the Comm Guards winning all of their playoff games up until this point, resulting in a catastrophic loss for the Diamond Sharks. As we all know, teams play multiple teams simultaneously in hockey, and if they win, they can hit the ice to back up any other of their own team that are still playing.
This happened during the great NHL-WWE merger of 2032, of course, team hockey became a thing.
Yes, the totally reasonable 15-on-5 power plays were a thing briefly.
I have to say, adding skates and hockey sticks to Hell in a Cell sure did change that one, though.
So many twisted ankles.
Ric Flair on skates just yelling woo sounds like so much fun.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Sometimes we would say that coaches should try other careers, and in this case the Diamond Sharks switched from hockey to industrial design.
So okay guys, I know we're memeing and stuff, but I am so lost. What is going on?
So a bunch of Deep Periphery clans. You remember the Deep Periphery? You remember the clans, sure. Right?
Yeah.
They all decided to invade the Inner Sphere. And yes. they all decided, they warred for like a couple years, and then they're like, we're going to have 15 months of peace, or whatever it was. A very short amount of time.
15 years.
15 yeah. years, sure. And then they said like, oh, we're going to settle it all in 2KE'd. Everybody's going to show up at 2KE'd, and if you guys could beat us, then we'll say that you guys are the winners. And they just showed up, and they just like strapped butter to the bottom of their feet while they were landing, and...
Oh, I remember this part, yeah. They instead of coming in all at once, like you should when you're fighting one big army, they came in one at a time.
Exactly.
Just got all slaughtered, yeah.
Exactly. And the final team here, the reason I wanted to set it up as a recap, as like a sports recap here, is because it is very much a planned out kind of event that happened. And this second part of the Battle of Tukiyid, sadly, I guess... not so much like a lot of our episodes, this is not a standalone episode. This is starting at the end of an episode that we did 2 weeks ago that was just too fucking long, basically. Yeah. So
if you're cool. If you listened to this one last week and you had to wait a week to listen to this one and now you've forgotten everything that we've said, I guess tough. You should have listened to this one sooner, huh?
Yeah.
Even though you're listening to it at 7 a.m. Eastern when it comes out, you should listen to it sooner.
So, you know what? Like a lot of stuff bounces off my smooth brain, so I'll try and play the role of the person who maybe doesn't remember as much. So, we'll fill them in as we go.
We do have one more. We do have one more little. Game here to recap here, because I think Ian Holm, you should head back to your bookie and get back your in quotes investment, because the game between the Comm Guard and the Ghost Bears ended in a draw. I don't know how gambling works, but I guess a tie means you get your money back.
The people that I gamble with don't always like to give me my money back, so. Gonna have to take yours. Now, I don't know if you noticed this this giant mech warrior that's been sitting in the studio with us, but I'm gonna climb into that, and I'm gonna rob you of all your money right now, okay?
So,
all
right.
Just get your wallet ready, would you? I'm just gonna clamber up here.
See, Ethan made the mistake of climbing it. Ethan still uses an Inner Sphere mech, and I use a clan mech, Ethan's mech doesn't take debit.
I'm in it in a sec. I got one of the old credit card knuckle busters there. You know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So just get it ready. Do you have any cash on you? Because cash is better.
Nope.
Honestly, cash is
nope.
better.
No, I don't. yeah. That's the old style mechs were tank busters, bunker busters, which is heavier artillery, and knuckle busters, which is graphite credit card technology to take imprints from their enemies.
Yeah, and also if you're near a Dairy Queen, a nut buster parfait, I think you can get.
Delicious.
Delicious
and nutritious. It's got peanuts, I'm pretty sure.
We are sponsored. Sorry, I just touched a big clump of cat hair, and it grossed me out viscerally there.
I know you just cooked a steak. I thought you reached out of camera and put your hand in a steak.
No, it's in the kitchen.
I put my fingers in meat. Ugh.
So just to finally recap the early parts of the Tukiid conference here, the Ghost Bears did end in a draw against the Comm Guards, and they took their 1-1 prize money and made a country within the Inner Sphere. Basically, they set up their own little dominion called the Ghost Bear Dominion, where they had headed over to the Kegger with the Rosselhogs and
the Ghost Bears and the Rosselhogs were like, fuck this. This game is dumb. Let's go party.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like what we need to do is shotgun some tall boys. Cause war clearly is not our forte.
Yeah. I guess for anybody who's listened this far, without the context, do go listen to our first Battle of Tukiid episode, which came out 3 weeks ago. And God bless you for sticking around through all that if you didn't know what the fuck's going on. Like Jamie. Yeah. God bless you, Jamie.
I'm chained to my chair, though, so I don't have much choice.
I like to launch the boys into a little bit of improv here and there. And my beautiful fiance and I were talking a couple of weeks ago, and she was like, I have like advanced to the point where I have like a friendship with Ethan that is separate from just him being Peter's friend. And she was just like, he sometimes complains that he's like, I try to set up the boys to do these little improv sketches every once in a while, but it's so hard via Discord. Yeah. And so I wanted to write one for that because I found out about your desires.
that's always my sound check. Saying I like something is usually like my attempt at trying to get you guys to riff. That's why today I was very disappointed when you were like, I got nothing better than what Jamie said.
Well, it turns out I had written it. I had written it days ago.
This made me very happy. So, for the listeners, it's apparently only something you'd listen to when you're chained to the desk, according to dinner at host James O'Frick. But yeah,
I have a hard time retaining the BattleTech stuff. So the layer of improv on top of it, I was like,
oh yeah,
I wasn't sure where we were.
Yeah, I threw the NHL in there as well. It's just like, oh, son of a bitch.
Yeah. NHL's not my forte either. Oh, yeah.
Jamie's like, oh, fuck, they're going to ask me to read next.
Yeah, we would never do that, okay?
Come on. Woman went to the door. Jamie can read, folks. He reads all his episodes. Don't add him.
Yeah, Jamie tries to spell my last name that has two silent letters in it. Yeah. Stroke.
When I have written your last name, I have checked your Twitter before. Just to be sure.
Yeah. So, now that we had a little bit of fun there, we can get into the final moments here of the Battle of Tukiid from BattleTech. Mm-hmm. We left out the two major clans from BattleTech, which are the Jade Falcons and the Wolves. Or the Clan Wolves. I don't know how you would pluralize that.
Clan Pupperinos.
Yeah, exactly. The Clan Fursuits and the Jade Falcons. Mm-hmm. So the Jade Falcons have a strategy. They're kind of laid back, and then the wolves are all yiffing all the time.
Good.
So they don't actually ever fire their weapons. They just leap onto other mechs from behind to give them shoulder hugs.
Aww. Yeah. That's kind of sweet.
So the final two clans involved in the Battle of Tukiid, like I said, with the clan, the Jade Falcons, the Clan Wolf. The Wolves used to have a first part of their name since they had been founded by Mark Twain, but this has since been scrubbed from their history. So it's just Clan Regular Wolf.
Okay.
if/fic when we do a clan history episode, we'll detail their history a lot more because they're like directly tied to characters from pretty much every episode of BattleTech that we've already done.
Yeah.
What you need to know for now is that the Wolves and the Jade Falcons were part of the original 20 that were founded in the Deep Periphery by Nicholas Kerensky, who was the eldest son of Alexander Kerensky, who was the head of the Star League.
Who led the Alliance,
right? Yeah, the Star League Defense Force, actually. Not the Star League. Sorry, I wrote that wrong.
Yeah.
And he, exactly, led the Exodus from the Inner Sphere. He was just like, fuck you, I'm taking the jocks and the nerds, and we're out.
We're out of here. And yeah, I'm sure exactly. There will be no jock-on-nerd violence or vice versa.
No, exactly. Well, I mean, the Inner Sphere left behind was basically just like the dean of the university, and that was it. It was nothing but university deans left behind.
The dean and the Melvins, right? All the kids who are like, oh, don't worry, I'm here to snitch on the other kids, you know?
I don't know. Randall was the narc in Recess.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the hunchback.
Yeah, I meant Melvin more as a generic term, not as everybody was named Melvin or Dean, but maybe.
Okay, right. Well, I was talking to the dean as in, like, the head of a department in the university.
Yeah, I know. And I was talking Melvin as in, like, a suck up. I don't know if that's generally used, but I used it generally.
Yeah. Maybe we've just coined the term.
Guys, you're like a Randall and a Melvin trying to figure out a point right now, guys.
Peter, Jamie's talking shit about me. Come on, do something.
Oh, don't worry, I'll punish him. But his grades are too good, so I guess I'll just lie about it.
Yeah.
I can't even read somehow, so
it works. Reading's for nerds.
So the last clan to go in our last episode were the Ghost Bears, and following them were the Jade Falcons. They're also the antagonists of the 80s cartoon, where a character named Nikolai Malthus leads the invasion of the planet Somerset. I discovered this week that the remastered BattleTech 80s cartoon is just available on YouTube.
Nice.
Didn't we watch like the first episode back in the day when we were doing these BattleTech episodes? Maybe not the remastered.
Transformers for sure together.
We have watched the BattleTech cartoon together because it was back when we used to like clear out an entire 2-4 before we recorded and then get a secondary one for after.
Yeah.
I remember it distinctly, the three of us just peeing ourselves laughing at like the 80s CGI that like kicks into gear when the battles start in the cartoon itself.
Well, I have distinct memories of this thing, and I'm glad to know it wasn't just a fever dream.
No, you did not. It was not just a beautiful dream of an 80s cartoon. it exists now and has been remastered and posted to YouTube. So,
because you know, every time I do peyote, all I see is 80s cartoons.
Yes. There's Ethan huddled around a bucket filled with his own vomit, and all he's doing is talking to Hot Rod from Transformers. That's the guy who descends from the moon to give him advice on his life.
It's all gossip too about the Transformers universe. It's all Starscream said this, and Bumblebee said that, and you know, Optimus Prime is dating who these days? Hot Rod's a good guy though.
Yeah, it's Rodimus Prime now, which. I don't know. It's a good stage name for a porn guy, I think. The Falcons had some experience with what they described as dishonorable comm guard tactics. If you remember from the previous episode, the comm guard are the private military set up by the communications company and central bank of the Inner Sphere, which is just the worst thing ever. No,
they're pretty good for justice, I bet.
Yeah.
I'm sure they are.
It's good. Why would you want to have to go to the mall and to the courthouse to pay your alimony? You know what I mean? Why not just go to the mall and pay your alimony there? This sounds like a win-win for me.
Yeah, dude, I would love the military-protected alimony booths at every mall. Speaking of the 80s.
Yeah. G.I. Joe delivers the kid his own fucking alimony pay.
Hey, you kid, remember, if you ever divorce a woman after putting a baby in her, you owe her money forever.
And, and knowing is half the battle.
So the Falcons had already fought the comm guards, and they had been defeated at the Battle of Twycross, which we have mentioned but not done a full episode on. It's just another clan v comm guard battle back in the day. The dishonor with the comm guard tactics is apparently winning in a different way, because as we'll discuss in this episode and we did in the last one, comm guard tactics are seemingly quite reasonable, like sending backup and shit, opposed to the just like me so strong sort of mentality of the fucking clans, where it's just like, oh well, if our leader dies, then we just all kill ourselves, sort of thing.
This is why I mentioned the jock on nerd violence, because clearly the jocks just murdered all the nerds as soon as Alexander Kerensky left the Inner Sphere. Because they're all just these dumb big meatheads that have like ceremonial battles to the death and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, stuff that no nerds would brook. So he literally just took, and we talked about this on the last episode, where I think he's the big bad guy of this whole, the entire series, because he literally just took all the smart people and had them murdered in deep space.
Well, I mean, MERS legal in international waters, yeah, but when you go to space, international, you go even further. So you can get free music and kill nerds is in international waters.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. The Falcons for the Battle of Tukid sent in their Delta, Vau, and Gamma galaxies, which galaxy is a very large contingent of battle mechs, because a star is 5, and then you've got a binary, which is 10, and a trinary, which is 15, and then it goes to like clusters and galaxies and all this shit, and more math than I can possibly handle. And so anyway, they sent these three galaxies to Tukid in an effort to land before Clan Wolf and mock the comm guards, as they integrated in their own Falcon guards. And the Falcon guards were kind of called Desgra, which is a clan term for disgraced, because they had been defeated in the past. And as we know from like Bat Call being just a lazy portmanteau of battle and challenge, I think Desgra is just because disgrace is too hard to say. I didn't look it up. That's just Lore Boys canon there.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. The Falcon Guards were among the forces defeated by the Comm Guards previously at Twycross. So they were just like, wow, we're going to shame these guys by sending in these nerds they've already stomped. Like, isn't that going to work?
Yeah. Well, no, because last time they lost, I gave them an atomic wedgie and told them they better not do that again.
What is the difference between a wedgie and an atomic wedgie?
Atomic wedgie is over the head.
Yeah, I was going to say the band on the forehead.
Yeah, the band on the forehead is an atomic wedgie.
Oh, yeah. My God. I don't think I own a pair of underwear that could physically do that. That's horrible.
No, that's the common misconception. You think the underwear stretches, but it's actually your body that stretches.
It's the nerd that flexes. It's not about
folds you up in on yourself. Think of a woman twerking, would you, James? Think of the way that her back arches between her pussy and her crack, and her butt flexes up into the air. That shortens the distance between her forehead and her butt. Not something you'd normally think of while watching a woman twerk, but
maybe I'm not very flexible, but I don't think maybe my underwear is too small. I don't know. I don't think it works.
The shortest distance between a pussy and a crack is a straight line. And then anyway, that's the math.
So Katoa in her butthole.
Jesus. Why is this? Oh my God. It was a sunny day today, folks. I'm sorry. We've all been outside barbecuing and drinking. So, the Falcon Guards were under the command of Aiden Pride, who is the brother of Martha Pride. We've talked about Martha Pride in previous episodes. She is easily one of the most important characters in the Battletech universe. Mm-hmm. Like, I recognize her name along with, like, Kerensky and Focht and all this and like Devlin Stone and like all the real motherfuckers from Battletech. Martha Pride is among them. Aiden is described as unconventional. He dyes his hair and uses a flip phone, so you know, he's like real unconventional cool guy shit. He's also known as Jorge for some reason, which is not a made up fact. Aiden Pride's in canon nickname is Jorge.
Okay, is that just like a weird racism thing, or
I don't think so. I think the clans probably moved beyond that and moved much more into like the jock nerd dynamic, opposed to like a.
Is it spelled like George? Like, is it spelled like the Spanish spelling of George, or is it like H O R H A Y or something weird?
It's J O. It's J O R G E. It's just straight up regular Jorge.
Okay,
and they call Aiden Pride that.
Okay.
Yeah,
sure. I don't think they thought much about it, so we probably shouldn't think too much about it.
Yeah, probably not when they were writing this, but like, nations, the nations of Earth probably meant literally nothing, even to the borders of the kingdoms of the inner sphere, let alone the clans that like left from that. So I have no fucking idea why they called them Horae.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I said, is it a weird racist thing? I was like, is this just like a weird like cultural appropriation that the writers put in, not like an in canon racist thing? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, maybe. I mean, it was the '80s. So yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Probably.
Racism was cool. Drugs were bad. OK.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Reagan. Yeah. Aiden had also studied Earth, or as it's known here, as Terran culture since arriving in the inner sphere. So in the 3 years of the during the clan invasion, he started to kind of, you know, he's like, oh, wait, don't burn that book. I'm going to keep that one for my, you know, creepy horde of Earth books, basically. So he was studying Terran culture, but he couldn't really grasp it, I suppose, because he was born in the deep periphery. So he wasn't really sure what he was reading. Perhaps what really made him unconventional, Loreboy's canon, was his request to conquer only the hilarious-sounding target cities of Ulala and Hump Tulips,
right.
Which we mentioned in the last episode.
We did talk about those on the last episode. They were a potential title, I think.
I googled Hump Tulips, and it is a real place in Washington State, and I'm sure in Europe.
Okay, now,
I don't know. Go ahead.
Is it tulips the flower, or is it two lips, like the lips on my face?
No, it's T-U-L-I-P-S, okay. So the flower.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you studied Terran culture from a distance, it'd be kind of weird, too. We do a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah,
like, why do you, whenever you care about someone, you place your two lips together? Like, who started that?
Well, you're doing it it to create one continuous tunnel from my butthole to their butthole.
Right.
Butt to butt. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Humans
why don't shake hands?
Humans are just donuts when you think about it. And the hole in the middle is goes from your mouth to your butt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not much I can say about it. It's true.
By Timbits, sponsored by Tim Hortons.
Yeah. Tim Hortons.
Timbits, though, isn't that like a little insensitive? Because it's named after Tim Horton, who died in a car crash. And then they have all these little bits named after him.
Yeah.
It's jelly filled and shit. Oh, this one pops in your mouth. Like,
hell yeah, dude. This one's you have the birthday cake Timbits on the days when it would have been his birthday.
Oh my god.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Did Tim Horton die in a car accident? Is that a real thing?
And a piece of glass in it, you're like, oh, it's so festive. Because he was drunk, right, when he crashed his car?
Yeah, I wasn't there, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I wasn't at that part. I'm learning all this stuff. I'm Googling.
I wasn't at that part. Jamie, pull up the clip while we did
yeah,
this.
Tim Horton was like a famous hockey player. He played for the NHL, which I don't know much about, but I know him because there's like a coffee chain that used to be really good, but has been declining in quality over time in Canada.
Their eggs got better recently, though.
Okay.
Yeah, they got bought out by Burger King. Boyga King.
Yeah. Burger Bing. Yeah, Kurger Bing.
Yes, he was drunk when he crashed his car.
There we go. All right, well, there goes all of my pity. That is the most irresponsible thing you can
do. If he only would have stopped and got a coffee.
Yeah,
I know.
Well, you know that little bar on a chain, the clearance rack for the drive-thru, so you don't bring like a big-ass truck through there? And that's what he'd do. He just like went in with like a Mercedes Sprinter, clipped the top of his van, and just rolled through the drive-thru. Yeah. So other than Tim Horton, on the side of the Comm Guard, so this is to defend Ulala and Hump Tulips. Yeah. The green rated 11th and 3rd armies got some backup from the 394th, 77th, and 309th divisions that were put under actually the direct control of the Big Dick Daddy himself, Precentor Marshal James Miller.
Oh, James O'Frick.
No, it's Anastasius Focht, but you chose the Precentor Marshal tag at the beginning of the episode, so that's I just figured I'd give you that one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Although, if you wanted to get a mullet and eye patch and just become Anastasius Focht himself, I would totally support that.
I would date you.
All right, man. Yeah, I'm down for the mullet. Like, we've got, maybe not that much time on our hands anymore, but I got long hair. Let's go for it.
Yeah,
that's true. Like,
Anastasius Focht is on the side of the Inner Sphere Defense Comstar, right?
He is the head of the Comm Guards.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Just making sure. Exactly.
He is the disgraced Steiner Prince who had been kidnapped and changed his name, and now he works for the Comm Guards.
Right. Got chained to a chair, forced to listen to a Lore Boys episode where they talked about sports and Battletech, and he came out a changed man.
Yeah, exactly. That's where he got his eye patch. We don't know how, but I mean, Lore Boys would fucking do that too. Yeah. They handcuffed one of his eyes to a radiator, so we had to saw it off. Oh, God. I've seen Saw. That's what happens in that movie, right?
Pretty sure.
Just handcuffed normal size, though. Just like, not even on.
Just a handcuff resting on his face.
Yeah, it's just like stuck to his face.
If someone only bought that dude a normal size bike, this never would have happened.
Yeah.
He was never fulfilled with his hobbies, you know? Yeah.
The command staff of the 11th and 3rd didn't have much combat experience. That's the green, the green rating is just, they're just greenhorns, right? Okay. However, if you recall, Focht had been training people in simulators for some time. That was the thing he did. He had started doing, like, at the beginning of the invasion, which we talked about in the last episode. He was just like, okay, just, like, sex up our best mechs and put them in the simulators against this thing to train them against the future technology that is invading us from outside of space right now.
They have lasers. Let's train them on what to do when you get shot with a laser. How to staunch a laser wound.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like pre-grilled at that point. You don't really need to do anything. You just like toss in some polysporin and one of those like $2 elastic pharmacy bands and you're good to go, right?
And that was that course. That's all it was.
Oh, yeah.
Would a mirror like stop a really powerful laser? Would it like bounce it back or would it go through the mirror?
It would probably heat up the laser and just burn through it.
It would like probably bounce back at first and then like kind of like melt its way through, or what? I don't know. I don't have many lasers.
Unstoppable object versus an immovable force? Is that what you're asking here?
How do you counter a laser is the thing.
Do laser beat mirror? Google.
Does laser beat? Yeah. The game of the future of rock, paper, scissors.
What does Google say?
Okay, the top one. So Google's pretty good. Does mirror armor work against laser guns?
And?
Mirror only means that laser beam is reflected as a beam. On dense battlefield, that's exactly what you want to avoid because it would be even more deadly than traditional ricochet. No go for mirrors.
Okay, all right.
What you want is just white, as bright as you can get it, to reflect light in all directions, making it less threatening to other soldiers. And you need it to stay white. Heat your armor absorbs, because it will absorb some, must be distributed and dissipated fast. If it can't,
who wrote this?
Black burn marks are not acceptable. This is worldbuilding.stackexchange.com was the featured snippet on Google.
It sounds like there's a laser like incoming, so we got to cut out all the unnecessary words.
Yeah.
Well, lasers travel
faster
than traditional
bullets. Why make good tactic when short tactic better?
A lot of world building. StackExchange.com. We got a Quora answer here.
Oh.
Do mirrors reflect lasers? First of all, there are first surface mirrors and rear surface mirrors.
Oh, my. I'm a rear surface mirror man. I'm all about that. I like a mirror with good hips.
You like to hit a mirror from the rear?
Hell yeah.
I like to hit a mirror from the front so I can see my shame. First surface mirrors are only found in industrial equipment because they are easy to scratch and damage a silvered surface. So I guess it's just like you have a silvered surface and then you have like a layer coating it.
Of the glass on top. Do you put the silver? You probably want the silver on the outside or else the laser would melt.
If you shine a 1 megawatt laser at a 90% mirror with 1 centimeter spot size, then you'll have 100 kilowatt dissipation. Wow, this is way too technical for us.
Hang on a second. This is turning into work here.
All right. I'm satisfied with the answer. I'm going to wear all white.
I think
not after labor. Lasers are more effective after laser Labor Day. Oh my God, Laser Day.
Don't wear white after do wear white after Laser Day. I guess.
After Laser Day, which is September 2nd.
Yeah.
So he had been Anastasius Focht had been, I guess, teaching people to wear white. Yeah, in the simulators, since the clan started to invade,
shows up to lecture, and he's just the prof in a full white tuxedo, and everybody's just like, yeah, get a load of this guy, starts firing off lasers at all the students, like.
Oh yeah, he was one of those cool teachers from movie where he's just like, it's real trial by fire.
Yeah, yeah.
But he had put all of his green soldiers in simulators, and then he wanted to make sure that like his gamers could pull the trigger when it came like time to do so. So this is why he reinforced their divisions on the battlefield against the Falcons.
Right, right. I can kill a man. I've played The Last of Us, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Anyway, video games cause real world violence is the point of this episode. That's what I'm getting at.
That's the truth.
Yeah. Not wanting to be a fucking hack and recycle jokes like some kind of lore boy, Focht allowed the Jade Falcon's dropships to land unopposed this time. Because as we recall, he shredded the Novacats in the atmosphere when they were just like, what if we stealthily fell from the sky like beautiful snowflakes? bad strategy, apparently.
There's nothing in nature more durable than the snowflake.
What was that?
There's nothing in nature more durable than the snowflake.
No, exactly. If it could just like melt on the exterior of your sunglasses, it's like, ah, yes, God's perfect creation. And he had hoped that letting them drop unopposed would make them paranoid, again, after the Novacats had been shredded to pieces by dropping slowly. So he's, I don't know, like playing mind games against the clans as they all, to fuck with their honor more than anything. Because they do have a very rigid culture. And obviously he knew this at this point. This worked, thankfully. So the Falcon forces advanced cautiously, all the while being harassed by light scout mechs, which was referred to as Strike and Hiss by Marshall Focht for some reason. I don't know what that means. Like, the strike part is just like, hit him with a light weapon and then fucking say something mean.
Yeah, raise your hackles, you know, scrape the air against the back of your throat. It's pretty stock
standard. Well, I guess it's like the bark is worse than the bite kind of thing. You got to show them the bite first, you know, the bark's serious.
Yeah. Hey, homeboys, all strike and no hiss, right? Yeah. Am I right, fellas?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Oh my God, we're hit, we're hit. No, wait, we're fine. He's not hissing. Let's keep going.
Yeah.
He was just testing us to see if he could eat us like a shark or something.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, he's not serious, though.
Yeah.
Regardless of whatever the fuck he meant by strike and hiss, this strategy convinced the already cautious Falcons that they were up against multiple divisions of the 11th Army instead of a single division of non-battle-hardened nerds that they were actually up against. So, I don't know, it's like a Hall of Mirrors thing, just like, oh, I'm over here, pew, and they're like, oh, God, no, stop
it. Which we know is extremely dangerous if you're shooting lasers around, okay?
That's true. Yes, we have I'm established. Over here, pew, and shoots himself in the head, basically.
And then you hear the hiss of his smoldering neck.
Oh, maybe that's what that means, yeah.
This is what the Battletech writers were getting at.
Of course, yes. Sure. this tactic delayed the Falcons and allowed the defenders of Robin's Crossing and the Plow Bridge, which again is great, this allowed the defenders here to prepare the bridges. These are the only two bridges over the like dangerously choppy Presno River. Plow Bridge has the distinction of being where Tukiidian high school sweethearts go to lose their virginity.
Gotcha. It's a nice overlook.
I mean, that's lore boys canon, but
I figured
it happened. Yeah.
I'm having fun and it's almost too late for me to ask what's going on, but who is defending and who is attacking right now?
The comm guards are defending against clan Jade Falcon.
Yeah. Okay. Jade Falcon's attacking and the comm guards are
at present.
Yeah. So we had two clans left, Jade Falcon and Clan Wolf.
Yeah.
Clan Wolf is like the hero clan. I think in a lot of the games. Peter's drinking a beer, but he's giving me a nod, so I'm gonna keep going. And then Clan Jade Falcon is the bad guys in the 80s TV show at the very least. So not necessarily good people. And the fact that
they're
like,
pretty much the rival to Clan Wolf, because they're the two that have like kind of the most political power. Okay. They're the main bad guys that kind of bicker amongst themselves. The other clans, other than Smoke Jaguars, which we have a full episode on already, are kind of like
Okay.
Less important, at least at this time in history. Yeah. In the 30s, 50s.
Because smoke jacklers are also kind of a rival.
Comm guards are home and Falcons are away, but they're trying to win.
Whoa. Exactly. Who's this sports fan that we got in the podcast here?
Huh? I'm catching up, guys. I'm catching up.
Jamie, that analogy was a touchdown, my friend.
Yes, it was. That's good, right?
Yeah, I got the second question. What happens to water when it gets cold?
Freeze.
It freezes into ice. Okay, we're almost at the hockey point.
Ice? What are you talking about?
We're almost there.
That's my dog's name.
Oh.
Senora.
Yeah.
These two bridges, so the Robins Crossing and the Plow Bridge, would serve as exploitable bottlenecks against the advancing Falcon forces. The bottleneck is the term in Battletech that the clans use to refer to the slimmer part of a bottle.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay. It's a portmanteau of bottle and neck in the same way as of bat call.
Yeah.
Because if you personify a bottle, that's where the neck would be.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, no, where's the neck on my...
I'd fuck a mirror, but not a bottle.
Now, where's the neck on my smartphone? If we're personifying that.
Which smartphone do you have?
I have a...
Do you have the Samsung Neck 2, or do you have a Galaxy?
I have the Samsung necklace.
I can't tell you where the neck is, but if you flip it over, there's the back. And then if you look lower, there's the pussy and the crack. So.
Oh, yeah, there
wait,
we go.
My charging slot is a pussy?
Yeah, I didn't say that.
And then there's a mono speaker and a microphone as well, which I think is also in that song.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah. My neck, my back, my mono speaker and microphone and pussy and my crack.
I don't think you have to say pussy and crack.
Well, no, pussy and crack is definitely in the song too.
True.
I'm just singing the song as I remember it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was in a commercial for like the Motorola Crazer, right? Like that's what it was written for.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how I feel about this next plot point. The clans got like suckered into letting the Comstars set the targets. Which is something that I complained about in the last episode, but I don't know why they didn't pull out of all these exploitable targets as well. The volcanic wasteland and like the Whitewater River were both incredible. So basically what we're going to do is stand up on this hill, and then you guys are going to go stand in this swamp with no cover. And the clans are like, we got it.
Stop us with your hill? We have we have swamp powers now, you fool. We will simply inject swamp water into our bullets and infect you with the swamp, my friend. You have played yourself, you fool.
But naturally, Anastasius had prepared for this and had equipped all of his inner sphere mechs with mirrors, which repels swamp water.
Yeah.
That
I don't need to Google. That much I know at the very least. That
yeah, exactly. We don't need to look that one up. But like a lot of the cities that like the targets that have been set are also just like surrounded by kind of like natural barriers. So going back to the actual fight here at the two bridges, the 403rd division of the Comm Guard, so the defenders, Jamie, were crushed at Robin's Crossing by the first Falcon striker. Then the Falcons moved in their 305th assault and 124th striker clusters onto the Plow Bridge. I guess they had some sweethearts they wanted to kiss all at the same time, and that's why they were just like, what if we sent, now hear me out, our biggest guys onto a bridge? Bridges known for their cover, obviously. You know, I mean, not that it was one of our beloved covered bridges. It was like a regular suspension bridge, I'm assuming, right? So
sure, yeah. I was picturing an arch bridge, but...
Yeah, or yeah, something to that effect, like something big that would get you over the Presno River, which is, you know, known to be violent.
Sure.
Yeah. The 403rd division, the Comm Guard's 214th division fell apart after being bombarded by the 305th, who were 305th or Falcon. The Falcon 305th was mainly assault mechs, which are the most heavily armed and armored mechs of the day. There are super heavies that come later that have like three or four legs, not important. At this time, the heaviest mechs available were between 80 and 100 tons of just armor and guns. Like, that's it. Except, like, there are some command mechs, but whatever. The ComGuard's 388th had dug in around Robin's Crossing and held their ground against a Falcon Guard until Aiden Pride and his Star, which is 5 mechs, jumped in and flanked them. So some mechs can get jump jets. Use superheated air to kind of launch a mech into the air. You can't fly, but you can like get over a decently sized fence at the very least.
I've mentioned it before. The only MechWarrior I've played is, I believe, MechWarrior 3, which came out sometime in the late 90s, early 2000s. I don't know.
Yeah.
I remember.
Like 98.
Yeah.
It's old as fuck.
I played it on Windows 98. I had a joystick, like an actual joystick with like, you know, thrust controls and all that stuff that I played it on. And I do remember I always played the lightest mechs, and I remember I had jetpacks. So my next question was going to be, why are these mechs even using a bridge? Why don't they just jetpack over it?
It's because they have a limited amount of fuel that needs to recharge. They get hot. Exactly. Yeah. It is really just for tactical repositioning more than anything. Yeah. Because I guess when your technology is based around being just slow and plodding, the ability to jump...
When I order a pizza, why don't they fly an airplane to me? It would be faster.
That's true. Yes, it would be faster. Yeah. Why don't do that?
Yeah. Well, they'd all just end up fucking folded in half.
Someone's in like the biggest fucking airplane, folds my pizza in half and puts it in the middle of like a huge warehouse.
Yeah.
Like a military carrier, just like one folded pizza on the floor. Like,
enough room for like 6 Hummers, but there's just one folded pizza.
Yeah. Just wrapped down in the middle of the floor. Like, yeah,
those ratchet ties. Yeah. So back at the bridges here, despite the losses, the ComGuard divisions bought enough time for their sappers to send a huge amount of clanners straight to hell. Sappers, I don't know if this is like a specific job.
It's an engineer.
Guys who blow up bridges. Yeah. It's an engineer.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's like engineers in war who blow up bridges.
Okay, perfect.
And stuff like that. Demolitions experts, things like that. Yeah, sappers.
Yeah. Excuse me. The ComGuards sent out their sappers to predictably blow up these fucking bridges, which is just what bridges are for in war anyway. When they detonated their charges, they collapsed both bridges at the same time. And the ComGuard had sent 60 clan mechs along with their pilots to be smashed to pieces in the Presno River's rapids. This included the entire command star of the Falcon Guards, except for Aiden Pride. So all of his best previously disgraced Falcon Guards were now dashed to pieces on the rocks below.
Should have repositioned that, idiots.
Yeah. Jumped it away now, moron. Like, can you imagine like guys ejecting underwater just onto jagged rocks?
Yeah, yeah.
And like how terrifying that must be. Ooh. And then so after this, before they could regroup, ComStar's 111th and 201st divisions came out of hiding and began to bombard the clanners with long range weapons and artillery, because like while all the mechs on the bridge fell into the river, not all of them were completely destroyed. And then we had two divisions on the other side in hiding, waiting for the detonation to go off. Aiden and Martha Pride responded with their own air force. So this is one of the first times the clans would bring in anything other than mechs.
Planes.
Exactly.
Remember,
yeah.
Like, stop delivering pizzas. Yeah, we got more important shit to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Get that folded pizza out of that hangar.
Yeah. pulls a zip on the parachute on one pizza, and it's like... And it's like dropped out.
Air just catches it, flies out the back.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's some mech on the ground just like lining up a target of ComStar regulars and just like spattered cheese and pepperoni across his windshield. He's like, oh no, goes completely crazy, starts shooting lasers all over the place. Like
a mech with pizza on its face. Maybe you'll see that in a couple of days.
Yeah. Better hope his friends are wearing white.
Oh yeah, just, like shred them all to pieces.
Yeah.
So the Pride siblings, that is, moved the remaining battle mechs to a more agreeable part of the river. They had brought military technicians to set up pontoon bridges to allow more mechs to cross the river. I mean, because I've been out in the wilderness of Canada, I'm familiar with setting up pontoon bridges and flying pontoon planes. it's just like a floating tube that you can put kind of minor infrastructure on top of for the uninformed listeners at home. But I'm sure we're all rural enough to understand what a pontoon is between the three of us.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about pontoons. I do know a bit about folding pizzas, but...
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I've been on a pontoon boat and a float plane. I mean, I've tried them both.
I think a float plane... I mean, a float plane would be the same thing unless it lands on its belly. But, like, a pontoon plane would be what they come out of the wings instead of wheels.
Is that it? Okay.
It's just, skis. It's water skis instead of wheels, right?
Boat. Well, I've been on that,
not like a water bomber that puts out fires or anything, but
all planes float in the sky, Peter. We can agree on that much, at least.
What was that?
All planes float in the sky.
That's true. So a pontoon is like a wing for the water.
Are you fair? Can't argue with that.
So while setting up the pontoon bridges, they did kind of sacrifice an entire star of clan mechs, so that's 5 more pilots down, bringing the total of just trying to cross this fucking river to at least 65, which honestly, for like a previously disgraced warrior cast, not a good day.
I mean, bridges are like pretty notorious in war, I think, like pretty iconic for like exactly like you say, bottlenecks and choke points. Like Napoleon defeated by a bridge. You know, after the Battle of Waterloo, his opponents dropped a bridge on the palace and crushed him. That's how Napoleon died. So,
oh yeah, they lifted a bridge over the Palace of Versailles.
Yeah, exactly, and crushed him.
Demolished it.
Crushed him in his sleep. Yeah. See, he'd been eating bridges. He'd been eating bridges in exile for a long time, and he thought he was immune to them, but he wasn't actually immune. So.
Ah, yes, the bridge assassination of Napoleon. The pontoon bridges allowed them to reposition and flank the comm guards, who were still kind of near the remains of the bridges that they had just detonated. This was very close to the hilariously named target city of Olala. The Falcon Air Force thankfully included some spy planes, and a spy pilot named Kale Pershaw was flying just a suborbital recon plane, and noticed some disparities between what he could see with his lying eyes and then the pre-battle maps that had been drawn up. His aircraft's GPS kept telling him to go straight, despite the fact that the road ended at a suspiciously clean cutoff point, and so did all of the other roads around the city of Olala. And like it seemed as though that Olala was set up kind of at a point around a bunch of cul-de-sacs that just kind of all ended at a city-sized little square.
Okay, so all these...
In the territory.
All these roads coming in end, or all these roads going out end?
All these roads coming into Olala just kind of abruptly ended at cul-de-sacs, and the city was positioned somewhere else compared to what he could see and what the maps had drawn. The maps showed that a city that had very distinct roads leading into it, which is kind of a more predictable thing, right?
Standard city, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He made the sensible decision to advise the Pride siblings and send only one star of mechs into Olala. He had watched Blazing Saddles on the clan's Amazon Prime subscription, mm-hmm. and had a sixth sense for this sort of elaborate trap. As the sacrificial star entered the city, Comstar's hand was played. They had executed the classic Rock Ridge Shuffle, moving the entire city to the site of some underground ambush bunkers.
So, like, all the buildings in the city were just, like, wooden cutouts, like in the old-time Hollywood West, where, you know, presumably Alexander Focht was standing there and a building fell down and he just happened to line up perfectly with one of the windows of said building.
I don't know if he Buster Keatoned, like, an entire skyscraper, because they were, obviously, it's the future. They got to one-up the past.
Okay, yeah,
right?
Sure.
They actually just moved the entire city.
But, like, was there just a crater there? Was there a decoy city? Like, was there...
No, they did not build a decoy city. This is what I was talking about with these suspicious cul-de-sacs, is they had just kind of cut the roads off and moved the city and just dropped it somewhere else.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So, it wasn't, like, the wooden cutout thing. It was just you know, it's like, wow, I can't believe all the windows on every building are broken because they were irresponsibly moved in a very short amount of time, sort of thing. when like viewed from the sky. So the comm guards did spring their trap, and they only managed to catch and destroy one star of Clan Mechs, so five more, because obviously Pershaw had told them, like, hey guys, something's a little fucky down there.
I know, you know, sci-fi and fiction in general has to take certain liberties to make a story worth telling and all this stuff, but the idea that these hyper-futuristic people just don't have long-range scanners to tell that a fucking city is gone is just, like, insane to me. Like, yeah. I know.
But it's like, maybe, yeah, I don't know. If it wasn't there in the first place, then if you're going somewhere, like, how would you know if Montreal was moved 5 miles east or something like that? Like, if you just went there and there wasn't a city, then there's nothing to, like, not... If it's not there, there's nothing to detect.
Yeah, I guess.
I know. It's so silly. It's just, it's the kind of, like, warrior mentality of the clans, where the comm guard just was allowed to set up the battlefield just to exploit the, like, chutzpah and the machismo of the clans. So they were just like, yeah, these guys are literally too fucking stupid to notice if we just move an entire city.
Don't worry about it. Yeah, they're kind of dumb, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, they killed all the nerds when they led the Exodus, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, Jamie's point makes sense, though. If I landed in Beaujolais Airport and I got on a bus to, like, go to Paris, the Paris city, and they were like, we got there and it was gone, I wouldn't have known the entire bus trip that it wasn't going to be there until I got there, right? Like, unless I'm logged into the internet and can access,
hang
like,
on,
people
I'm
reporting
into
this?
Paris.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, I guess an invading army wouldn't necessarily have that luxury of just, like, having access to classified information like they moved Paris.
Yeah. No. Well, what had happened here is...
You could read the signs. Oh, it's that way. But once you get there, then it's... Yeah. It must be not there.
Oh, yeah. That was the thing they neglected to do. It was like, oh, no, we didn't change the exit signs. They're going to think... they're going to think there's a Wendy's here, but we moved it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, that is fair. It's like Tuhiyit is obviously an intersphere planet that they're defending against an invading force. So the thing that gave them away was just the fact that the Falcons had spy planes, because they had taken like orbital photography prior to the invasion, and then the comm guards moved an entire city, and then this one guy was like, wait a second.
Pretty sure the city should be here.
So yeah, exactly. Wasn't there a Wendy's there?
Yeah, exactly. Did they put a face tune on this Wendy's? Because it's looking sexier than normal.
So they get there. There's no city. What's the next step? How do they handle that?
Well, so the comm guards didn't know that they had been caught. So when the star of the Jade Falcon Clan Mechs arrived, they just sprung the trap, destroyed the fuck out of them, and then were left realizing they had only killed five dudes.
Fuck.
Yeah, the remaining Falcon guards managed to escape because they had been warned, and then they actually destroyed the last of the 111th and the 201st divisions of the comm guards, possibly learning from the comm guards, and, you know, calling for backup. The Falcons moved in the first Falcon Velites, as well as the 89th and the 94th Falcon Strikers, to assist in hunting down the remaining 77th Division of the Comm Guard, like the wild hogs that they were. So they had their one star destroyed, and then they called for backup because they had seen that work for the Comm Guards in the past against the other clans. This actually allowed the Jade Falcons to briefly capture and hold Olala.
They got
one of their target cities.
We got one W.
Exactly, but now we need the saucier one, and we need to get Hump Tulips, baby. How do we do that?
Are we send in the clan wolves.
No, that's they don't share targets. The comm guards saw that the Falcon backup saw the Falcons backup and raised them one way more fucking backup. After the Ghost Bears had withdrawn in an earlier battle that we talked about in the last episode, the Comstar moved a massive amount of its forces to the front to support the guard at Olala via dropship. They also moved some forces from Hump Tulips to assist because the Falcons had focused Olalla and had been, you know, dropped into a river.
Yeah.
So Hump Tulips didn't really have too much to worry about.
Sure.
They were truly dedicated to saving Tuheed's horniest locations of like Hump Tulips and Plow Bridge. So a Comm Guard airstrike blew up a Falcon refit and resupply station as the battle began to turn against the Falcons. So they started to target their ammo reserves and their mechanics instead of just their soldiers, because they could really outlast, and like anyone who can run out of ammo can't last forever, right? The Khans decided it was time to withdraw after the destruction of their supply chain, and Tukied's tulip bulbs would remain unhumped.
Humped by the locals, presumably, because they're the ones that named it that.
Well, they had a celebratory hump of the tulip bulb. Like, dirty clan balls were spared from the garden, the window boxes.
The virginal tulips.
Tukied. Yes. at least for the next 15 years, of course. The retreat, however, would go down as one of, if not the bloodiest battle on Tukied, or maybe even the entire clan invasion. The Comm Guard's 309th tried to fight to the last man to stop the Falcons' retreat. Despite being filthy casuals, they managed to take 70% of the Falcons' forces with them.
Wow.
So they went down, but they took a lot of them. The desperate Falcon pilots smashed through the 90th Division on their way back to their landing zone. So they were just like, holy fuck, where did we park? We're never going to hump these tulips, boys. We got it. We got to go. Hit the eject, not literally take your mech with you, you idiot. After one guy has obviously just like spiraled off into the atmosphere. Yeah, yeah. they were intercepted by two Overlord dropships on their way back to their landing zone. Overlords are a huge military dropship. They're shaped like eggs. They carry 36 mechs as well as a bunch of fighter jets. So okay. It's kind of a full battalion here that drops down. It's 8 lances for the Inner Sphere.
Okay.
That figuring helps me.
An Inner Sphere boy.
That's 8 Fahrenheit.
Yeah,
8 lances is 36 Fahrenheit.
Oh, 36 Fahrenheit. Sorry.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. 92 degrees. I got you.
All right.
Figuring they needed to make an omelet before they all died, the retreating Falcons managed to shoot down one of the Overlords, destroying all the mechs and killing all hands when it hit the ground. However, the second one landed and deployed its forces successfully. So during their retreat now, the Falcons were faced with 36 fresh battle mechs that were coming down from the sky after they had just been, you know, the whole thing that had just happened to them.
Not looking good for our guys, the antagonists.
No, it is not. Aiden Pride stood his ground against the Comm Guard, allowing his sister and his remaining forces to board their own ships and escape. Aiden Pride was killed when his Timberwolf battle mech was destroyed. The final shot was delivered by a nobody named Dylan Dre, piloting an itty bitty little super light Stinger battle mech. It only weighed 20 tons. And since being killed by a light mech is for pussies, and the Comm Guard admired Pride's final stand, no one officially claimed the kill. So in the history books, Aiden Pride was absolutely not killed by some kid who just chucked a rock at his mech. and that was his final HP point.
So just some rookie just like enjoying a banana like on his own on his break during the battle. Just like, delicious, tasty banana. I guess I'll just throw this peel away and like tosses it to one side. And then Adrian Pierce slips on it, breaks his neck like... Ooh.
Yeah. So, and then he like toss a banana peel out the window. He's like, "Thank God I get 15 minutes off in every war." This union's really working for me.
They'll never let 2K8 host the Olympics again. Now that the leader of another nation has slipped on a banana peel down the stairs.
It's probably good for like the surviving veterans though, because like all of them could say, "Oh no, I was the one who killed him. No, I was the one who killed him." You know, and they could tell their grandkids that, and no one could prove them wrong.
Yeah. Well, they could at least they respected Aiden Pride a lot for his courage, and they would probably all tell their grandkids, "It's like, oh, don't worry, I shot Aiden Pride."
Yeah,
Yeah, it's like a firing squad where you give like 10 guys blanks, but and like or 9 guys blanks and 1 guy a bullet, so no one knows who killed the guy.
Yeah, kind of opposite though, right?
Where everybody has loaded guns, but no one knows which bullet killed them. Yeah, sure, it's yeah, exactly. Completely opposite. Actually,
the firing squad, you want everyone to be able to say like, "No, I didn't kill Mata Hari. It was yeah. You know one of the other guys in the firing squad."
So that was the end of the Falcon. That was the end of the Falcon incursion into Tuki'id. Now, if we recall in the last episode, Clan Wolf was voted by the other clan survivors on the island to go last in the battle as kind of a method of shaming them for buying up and using all the inner sphere intelligence that was freely given to them by Comstar in an effort to be just like, hey, what if you didn't kill us all? We'll give you everyone's secrets because we, you know, read your Facebook chats and your WhatsApp crap and whatnot.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. They did a classic.
It was just targeted ads at them.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
thinking about invading 2KE, consider not standing on bridges. The leader of Clan Wolf was like, okay, maybe I will consider that.
You know, those roaring rapids do look kind of dangerous, actually. Maybe I should avoid it. but anyway, that's why the clans were just like, you bitches, you can read, and they're sending you emails and shit. No, you go last. And Clan was just like, fucking fine.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. You guys soften them up as much as possible, and then we'll go. That sounds great. Yeah.
No, please stop. No. It's like I know we referenced Blazing Saddles already, but just for another classic Gene Wilder line is the one from Willy Wonka where, I don't know, one of the disobedient children was trying to kill himself.
Yeah.
The wolves didn't seem to mind, like I said, and they used this baby bitch currency called knowledge to their advantage. They broke from traditional clan tactics and prepared for the long haul because obviously at this point they had seen every single other clan just be like completely destroyed by Anastasius Fox just like calling in backup.
Yeah.
Where they had decided on like, well, we're gonna fight 20 on 20, and when Fox didn't do that, they were just like, I don't know how we got outnumbered.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. the second team was like, well, they did that to the last guys, but they wouldn't do that to us. And then the third team was like, well, they did that to the last two guys, but they wouldn't do that to us. And then the fourth guys were like, well, they did that to the last three guys, but they wouldn't do that to us. Et cetera, so on and so forth. Yeah. Here we are.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the clans are not gambling men, right? They're
not like,
I mean, they're stupid in a different way.
Yeah.
They set up supply chains and multiple locations to repair and reload. So they had, it's called an MFB. It's a mobile field base. And they had moved those around their areas, and they had them follow their lances as well, or their stars as well, to make sure that, like, you know, you didn't run out of ammo. But just in case, clan mechs are referred to as omni mechs because they don't have a hard point. This is in an older episode, but just as a quick recap, a hard point is just a section of a mech that you can only install one class of weapon in. So you have a hard point that contains heat sinks. That is for an energy weapon because lasers get hot. Then you have a missile rack. They bounce off mirrors. Exactly. Then you have a missile rack that feeds missiles, and then you have like a ballistic hardpoint that feeds bullets. Omnimex doesn't matter if they use something called an omnipod, so you can just take shit out and click it in. It's like kind of like a computer, I guess, where it's just like a bunch of slots for things. It's just like they have PCIe in all of their.
They invented the USB.
Exactly. Yeah. They still don't have fucking headphone jacks, though.
Yeah.
Dude, my new phone does have a headphone jack, and I just realized yesterday.
It's annoying, hey?
I wouldn't have bought it.
When I bought my last phone, I searched for phones that had them, and there's almost none that have them anymore.
Jesus,
they're
man.
So hard to find.
We all have headphones, apparently. I haven't had a headphone jack in years, because I use iPhones. But
All my previous phones have. My backup phone, because I break phones a lot, has one. It's one of the older Samsungs or whatever, but... My phone does not have one. It's so annoying.
Yeah. So yeah, the Omnimax do have, they can swap out their weapons, but there is still no headphone jack, so fuck us, I guess. fuck us, the 3.5 millimeter consumer.
Just half the clans got wiped out because they're like soldiers who were just in the mech trying to get their fucking Bluetooth headphones to connect.
Yeah.
When they got fucking wiped out.
Yeah. Microphone connected.
Yeah, yeah.
Disconnected. Disconnected. Apple Maps keeps telling me to cross Plow Bridge, but it's clearly been destroyed. I don't know where you want me to go. So they use their Omnimechs to switch over to mostly energy-based weapons, because energy-based weapons are good for the long haul. They can get hot, but they don't run out of energy.
Yeah.
Exactly. Heat dissipates.
Not on mirrors.
Sorry?
Not on mirrors, it doesn't. On white, no. It does, but not on mirrors.
Right. That's true. We learned. So they lined the insides of all their Omnipods with white fabric.
Yep.
To bounce the heat back into the laser, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
Khan Natasha Kerensky had also been using information she had gotten from the interrogation of the captured Inner Sphere military man Phelan Kell. Kell would eventually join the Wolves, and Phelan is Gaelic for Kell. And his bloodline is of some significance. Sorry?
Phelan is Gaelic for Kel, so his name is Kel?
Oh, God damn it. No, it's Gaelic for wolf.
Oh. I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that makes way more sense.
A lot more sense.
Sorry. Yeah. Phelan Kel, his name is Gaelic for... Yeah. His parents had no idea what they were doing.
Good old Wolf, the descendant of Pig the Cop, the Christmas cop.
Yeah, exactly. cop. Kell would eventually join the Wolves, as it would be revealed later on that his bloodline has some significance to them, which I will not get into because that is an entirely other war that we can talk about in the future. Fox knew that Wolf would be his most difficult opponent, and he tried to plan around that. He bet on the fact that all the other clans would be defeated and that he could reinforce his top-tier elite divisions with those still able to fight from previous engagements. So he did overcompensate in this case, where he's like, well, I'm clearly going to win these fights, so when I get to the final boss, I will have enough potions.
Yeah, I knew I saved those health potions for a reason.
Exactly.
You're telling me the man actually used them when when fighting Arunax or whatever?
He had been farming on... He had just been, like, farming the other clans for resources, and now he's ready to go. He's done all his crafting and all his alchemy and shit, so he's good. He transferred the 278th Division back up the 9th and 10th. The 10th was set to defend the target cities of Burzo and Scupo, which is also hilarious. While
not
the
sexy,
9th was
but still funny.
What was that?
Not sexy, but still funny.
Still funny. While the 9th was sent to defend the production company behind the Rugrats, which is Klasky Scupo. Like the Jade Falcon, the Wolf landed unopposed near the target cities, and expecting a fight, advanced slowly, but this time shoulder to shoulder. The inexperienced 66th and 283rd Divisions prevented the advancing Wolves from encircling their allies in the 166th and 278th. However, they were all pushed back into a wooded area at the base of a mountain.
So these guys are doing okay, our protagonists.
They're doing fine, not great. They are slowing the advance of Clan Regular Wolf, but not exactly pushing them back.
I meant our protags, regular Wolf, are doing pretty good as far as clans go so far.
They're doing better than the other clans because they were not like immediately bamboozled by backup, basically. The 278th had been transferred to, you know, help out, but now they were retreating under their own artillery fire, so they were using kind of the shock and awe bombardment thing that people used in World War I to cover their retreat by bombing behind them. After the retreat, Precentor Margot Koivu realized she was not being followed by Clan Wolf and ordered her recon teams to be reinforced. So she's the suspicious one. It was discovered that the Wolves were organizing wave attacks in attempt to completely bypass the 166th retreat. So they would hit them in big bursts to try and throw off like kind of the more consistent pattern of a retreating army.
Well, yeah, with their, because they have the laser weapons, right? So they overheat. So if they hit with all at once, then they all have to back up to let their weapons cool down. But if they hit, yeah, like, it's kind of like the musket fire rows, you know, where you one line of muskets shoot, then the second line of muskets shoot, then the third line of muskets shoot. So they never stop shooting. So you never have time, exactly, to retreat, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, like that had never occurred to me, but you're absolutely correct. Yeah. So the Comguard tries to organize some backup from other divisions, but the Wolves continue to push through and they completely destroyed the veteran 282nd Division. However, the sacrifice of the 282nd allowed the 10th Army to retreat back to Skubo. Clan Wolf had successfully captured Burzo, their first target city, so they very clearly knew what they were doing because
nobody yanked the bridge out from under them.
No bridges, and they neglected to move the entire city over a huge pit full of wooden spikes or whatever, or like under a big tree with a net. Yeah, they didn't think of anything clever this time. Focht managed to ambush the Clanners with his 138th Division, but either through stubbornness or stupidity, the Clanners simply could not understand the concept of an ambush in this instance and successfully defended themselves. They were just like, oh, no, this isn't a surprise, just another fight, lads, and defended themselves. Beating back the ambush and killing the division's precentor, Yernberg. Just some other guy who was in the fight. He's dead now.
Yernberg Miller.
Yernberg. Regular Yernberg. That was his name.
Miller's actually Gaelic for Yernberg.
Yernberg.
Yes, of course. And now we come to the conclusion of the fight here. Focht at this point was all, oh geez, oh man.
Oh, Gil almost had that sale, buddy.
Yeah, it's like, old fuck, then you did it there. Old fuck, you got him in, but you failed. You didn't hook the clan. Oh, he ordered the ninth to abandon the Rugrats Animation Studio and back up the 10th as they retreated to Skubo. Morale within the Comguard for the first time began to falter as the Wolves tore apart their divisions, including the elite 166th. The 278th at this point were the last Comguard division fighting back the clans, and Ulrich Kerensky ordered that the 11th Wolf Guard go in to finish off the division. Despite inflicting heavy losses on the 11th, the 278th went down fighting. So they're all gone as well.
Damn.
Yeah. Focht ordered his remaining units to retreat from Skubo to save their lives. At this point, he was no longer interested in defending the target cities. I mean, he's kind of at the end of his campaign where he was thoroughly victorious throughout the whole thing. So, I mean, maybe not ordering more men to go die for him was not exactly generous, but...
Yeah, I mean, fair. Right? I could see some narcissists, you know, being like, no, I could never lose. Like, I haven't lost yet. Blah, blah, blah. Like,
yeah. I have more indentured peasants to sacrifice. I'm not done yet.
Yeah. The character could have just as easily been like that, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. Wolf advanced slowly into the city, checking to make sure that it was in the same place as it was. So yeah. That hilarious goof we had made earlier was something that the Wolves had actually considered, where they were just like, okay.
Oh, shit. Anybody want Wendy's? There's a Wendy's right here. Oh, shit. Baconator. Nice.
Oh, hell yeah. No, the Baconators never run out of ammo, but they do run very hot.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, well, that's the problem. See, the good thing about Clan Max is they don't need a circular patty slot and a square patty slot. They can just enjoy either kind of burger patty.
Right, of course. Yeah, they have Omni burgers, yeah, which they can just put any burger they need into the mech. The withdrawal of the Jade Falcons provided Focht with a little bit more backup, so he tried one more time, which helped him push the Wolves out of Burzo. However, this was undone at night when a thunderstorm rolled in, and Natasha Kerensky moved in and ultimately captured the city. The Comguard pilot, while the clan ambush allowed them to take the city, Khan Garth Radek was killed when a Gauss rifle round hit his mech's cockpit. The ComGuard pilot who killed him was apparently the Roadrunner from Looney Tunes, because after he scored a headshot on Radix's 95-ton mech, it just toppled off a cliff and then landed on its head, crushing the cockpit even more.
And then an anvil landed on it, right?
Yeah, like, well, I
had a piano, and he came out, and he had teeth.
He had a cocktail parasol, like one of the tiny umbrellas, but it wasn't enough to save him from the piano and anvil.
Autopsy revealed 8 piano keys in his mouth. It's like, God, God damn those inner sphere bastards. So he was killed, but that was the end of him. Where am I here? Sorry. Phelan Kell, excuse me, who I had mentioned earlier, would later actually take Radix's position as a minor con of Clan Wolf. Okay. So Phelan Kell, after being interrogated, was just like, hey, man.
See, you got a vacancy after, you know, somebody. Yeah. Won't say who. Somebody.
You're a spineless coward who's willing to divulge secrets. You want a job there, son?
Oh, boy, do I. My skills include standing on the bottom edge of an overhang cliff and sawing upwards a hole through it, dropping pianos on people.
Perfect.
All good things. I'm really good at painting photorealistic pictures of tunnels onto cliff faces.
If that's even better.
That you're.
What is your defense against a man who straps a cartoon rocket to his back and thinks that would make him run faster than you?
I would simply use a big magnet to have him attracted to the magnet rather than my myself.
Excellent. Yes. Which is funny that we make these Wile E. Coyote references now. I'm realizing the one time the coyote caught the Roadrunner is he built a mecha coyote.
He caught him?
In the old cartoons, yeah. He didn't kill him, but he did end up catching up. Yeah.
The Wile E. Coyote clan.
Yeah.
So this would result in the victory of Clan Wolf against the ComGuards, because they did manage to capture both the cities, and this victory would become known as the Clan Wolf's greatest hour. After 21 days of fighting, the clans conceded defeat. They had 2 victories, credit to Clan Wolf, 2 draws, credit to the Jade Falcons and the Ghost Bears, and then nothing but painful and agonizing failure.
Within a country mile.
Nothing. They were adding up the points, and they got 2.5 out of a possible 10, and it was like, cool.
Although knowing the bargaining, you know, potency of the clans, I wouldn't be surprised. It was like, the first 6 matches, they counted for 100 points. Your last 2 matches only counted for 1 point each. So, you know, you got 1 point for the win, you got 0 for the tie, and now you're at minus 600, unfortunately.
It's like, oh, boo. I guess we only get 15 years of peace.
Yeah.
So the victory for the ComGuard, the Tukiid, gave them their shitty 15 years that they had bargained badly for when preparing for the clan invasion or the clan fight. And before they would resume the planned resuming of the invasion. However, the multiple failures and the kind of shaming of clan tactics changed politics within the clans forever, and is pretty much the catalyst, or at least one of the catalysts, for the Refusal War, which we're not going to get into in 3057.
Not going to get into on this episode.
Not currently, given
infinite time, the lore boys will cover that at some point.
The Refusal War.
War. I want to say Refugee War. I was like, I know that's not what he said.
No,
he just said it, but I've already forgotten it.
So on Tukiid, nearly a quarter of the clan cons were dead or missing, as well as other influential warriors like Aiden Pride, fucked, and Comstar would become deified, which kind of leads to the Blake Jihad, which we have an episode about already. Mm-hmm. And the clans who didn't like the terms would be destroyed in various operations like Bulldog. Again, we have Operation Bulldog episode. Yeah. And a lot of other important things happened just because of the Battle of Tukiid. It's kind of the linchpin. It's kind of where the story changes and flips into doing kind of other things.
I gotta say, I'm super keen on listening to the Blake Jihad now through the context of knowing who Alexander Focht was and you know, what Comstar did in this defense, more so than I was the first time we listened to it. I really like the Battletech episodes, Pete, so keep them coming, I guess.
Yeah.
They're very much my style, I think, so I'm happy to hear it from somebody else other than just me talking about Warhammer 40K for days and days and days.
It's so much information, but like doing the research is so much fun. And I do want to apologize to like some of our patrons, Darkseid especially, and other people who are just like, "Hey Pete, do more Battletech," and I'm just like, "I don't know, I didn't really like those games, so I guess I won't."
Pete doesn't want to apologize to the people who are just screaming, "Do Halo the Flood!" From the
That's
fucking
my
bleachers.
Next one, right? Okay, I promise.
You hear that? You heard it here first, folks. He promises. We do fulfill our promises. I've been your co-host, Ian Holmes / Ethan Palmer. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to get in touch with us, loreboys.com/about is a great way to do it. It's got all our contact info, and it has the Discord. That's got to be the number one way to get in touch with us. Peter, do you have anything that you want to plug?
Loreboys Podcast, or at Loreboys Podcast on Instagram is a very good way to get in touch with us as well. Discord is number one. Not only have all three of us individually signed out of Twitter, the Loreboys has signed out of Twitter. It's an awful place. And you can check out my publisher, Squared Idea, if you want some supplementary content in the intervening moments. And then Jimbo, anything you got?
You can find me twitch.tv/theloreboys. I've been streaming Tuesday, Thursday, Fridays lately. Fridays has been like so much fun. I've been
Friday night stream last week was so much fun, man. Oh my god.
Yeah, the last 2 weeks, even though it's WoW content, I don't think you need to fully know WoW to have fun, just because there's a bunch of cool people hanging out, and get in the Discord. I'll let you know when it's happening. And just
we were just doing a bunch of silly stuff and watching James do things very poorly, but well, if that makes sense. Like he was kind of trolling. Nobody tell if there's anybody who listens to the show is one of the people in his DKP raid. Don't tell anybody. But
so there's this one fight where I have to be on the wrong side. My job is to heal, but there's nothing to heal. So I was going for overhealing, which is completely useless. So I pumped all my buttons, popped a bunch of expensive consumes just to get the 69 overhealing.
69,000 overheal.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was a lot of over. It's like almost as much healing as like the healers are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then wasted effort. Yeah. Then ran in and melee'd the boss as a priest whenever the boss does like a fire nova and just kills me instantly.
Yeah.
It was it's complete, like,
and the one person who he actually was supposed to be keeping alive did die in that fight, and we all had a laugh because he died in every single fight. It was the guy.
Oh, that guy probably hates me, dude.
Anyway, we had a blast.
Come check out the Twitch, because there's a lot of silly stuff going on there. Yeah.
Jamie's chatting. I was in chat for the whole thing. I'm not there for all of them, but I try to always be there for them. Twitch.tv/theloreboys. You can spell it. I believe in you. Anybody who wants to support the show financially, big shout out to all our patrons. I believe question of the week from one of our patrons, Xavi, was what sound does a giraffe make? And I would assume that's just the sound of me peeing my pants, because I'm terrified of giraffes. Jamie, you're going to make me pee my pants. Stop doing that.
I've already peed my pants.
Anybody who wants to support the show like that and ask those questions, have us ask them on air, you can head to patreon.com/theloreboys and find us there. Super, 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 super appreciate it. You guys are the best. Love you. Kisses. Anybody who doesn't trust Patreon, of course, we do offer Loreboys Prime, something we've offered way longer than we've offered Patreon. And we use Loreboys Prime to get to the bottom of the greater questions in life, the deeper questions in life. You get to know us intimately. So we're doing some research these days. We need to find out what the perfect torque angle is for an atomic wedgie. We're trying to get Jamie's underpants up over his head, but the truth is that Jamie just doesn't own very stretchy underwear, so he's really got a bend for it.
They kind of crumble if you pull at them too much.
Yeah, no, it's so strange. I touch Jamie's underwear and they just turn to dust in my hand. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Like they're like mummy wrappings, basically. Yeah.
Exactly. It's as soon as you open up Jamie's sarcophagus and the atmosphere gets in, it just starts to immediately decompose.
Reggie falls out.
Yeah. So we need all the listeners at home to twerk and take measurements of the distance from their forehead to the top of their hips, both at the bottom of the torque and at the top of the torque. We did both those measurements, and then we can figure out the radians, the pie, the sweet pie that is that booty, that results in the trigger. And then we can do the math from there. Jamie's really good at math. He can't read, but boy, he's like Rain Man. I guess that constitutes.
Yeah, constitutes.
Lore boys.
Lore boys.
Lore boys.
Out.
My name's Ethan. Of all the colors of the rainbow, my favorite's gotta be blue because it reminds me of Jamie's blue, blue balls.
My name's DJ Blue Balls, and I love the color purple, which is the color after my balls are blue.
Oh, you should get that checked out.
My name is DJ Red Rocket, and I prefer to blue ball animals.
Gotcha. My name's Ethan. And my favorite color of traffic light is yellow because it implies a sense of danger.
My name's James, and I like yellow because, you know what? It's right in the middle. It's like the three bears stew kind of thing, or whatever they eat.
Well, it was always the last one that Goldilocks tasted was the best one.
But... yeah, but it's not too green, not too red. You know, it's not too fast, not too slow.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
My name is Peter. I share Jamie's opinion in that my favorite Mother Goose story is the one where Goldilocks dies in a traffic accident.
Okay. My name's Ethan. If I could be any animal, it would be the majestic sea slug who works tirelessly cleaning the bottoms of boats.
Yeah, my name's James, and I tried sleeping on my neck and my back, but it turns out I need to sleep on my pussy or crack.
And your crack.
Yeah.
Beautiful. You're a poet. Here we go.
I'm surprised that's not what knocked down my cool blood.
It's. I mean, let's be honest. If you hadn't already knocked it over before, you would have knocked it over this time.
Yeah,
for sure.
Exactly. It's a good thing I have the keyboard at the front of the desk and the laptop at the back, or else the laptop would have got the... This thing can handle a whole bottle of red wine, as we found out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Speaking of red wine, my name is Ethan. My favorite wine is white, because white is also the color of my favorite kind of caterpillar.
My favorite type of wine is the blue kind, because it's the rarest, because it's hard to get blue dye.
Oh, yeah, it's rare Pepe. They come from horseshoe crabs. Cost more than blood.
Yeah.
My name is Peter. I'm also a white wine kind of guy because I like to mix it with sparkling water because I'm weak of constitution. But the blue wine, you can get the Revolution Blue around Quebec's provincial holiday. The Revolution Blue comes out around June 24th.
It's like a chug jug. You guys ever heard that new chug jug song that's really popular on the TikToks?
Chug, nope. Chug,
it's to the tune of American Boy. I'm
You'll
going
be
down
my
to...
American Boy. Okay, yeah. I know it. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I don't know that.
Just cleared Tomato Town and like all this Fortnite bullshit.
Yeah.
But there's apps where you could upload anyone's face and make them sing it, and their eyes look all over and stuff.
Oh, I saw that.
Freaky. Yeah.
All right,
Jamie. Came in a little crackly. Could you hit me with that one more time? Okay, yeah, you're looking nice and square. Nice and square. Pete, why don't you hit me with one? Oh, Pete, that's awful. Yeah, that is just awful. That sound form.
Sorry.
It's no good. That's okay. I mean, it's not all of us could be gifted recording proteges like James over there.
Yeah, true.
He's eating his beard now.
Yeah.
Jamie, spit it out. Spit it out.
This is the future liberals want, like, put his beard on as a mask.
I can almost do it.
Drop it. Drop it, Jamie. Drop it.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.